May what I speak, may what you hear, be in the name of the God of love, who creates, redeems, and sustains every single one of us. Amen. Please be seated. That gospel reading, today's gospel, the account of the temptations of Jesus in the wilderness, it can appear, can't it, at first glance, to have little to do with us and our ordinary everyday lives. After all, when was the last time you were tempted to turn stones into bread? It's never happened to me. Or when was the last time the devil offered to make you king of the world, or even queen of the world, in return for worshipping him? Or indeed, when was the last time you were tempted to jump off a tall building in order to force God to send a host of angels to break your fall? So as I say, at first glance, these do not appear to be the sorts of temptations that come our way. But perhaps there's more to it than that. So let's look again in detail at that reading. Now, the key to understanding this text, I think, is to remember the Old Testament background. After all, Jesus was not the first person in the Bible to have spent some time being tested in a wilderness. Now, was he? Yeah? His ancestors, the children of Israel, also faced a time of testing and trial in a desert. Remember? In the Old Testament, we read how, having been brought out of slavery in Egypt, the children of Israel passed through water, in their case the Red Sea, and then they spent 40 years being tested in the wilderness. And lo and behold, today in the New Testament we see how Jesus, having also come through water, in his case the water of his baptism at the Jordan, he spends 40 days, not years, but days, being tested in the wilderness. That ain't no coincidence. And what's happening here in today's gospel is this. Jesus is reliving the same three temptations that his ancestors faced in their wilderness many years before. Only this time Jesus is overcoming those three temptations. So as I say, if we really want to understand this and what it has to do with us, we got to go back and look at those three original temptations, back with the children of Israel in the desert. So if you'll bear with me, let's do that. Let's go back to those children of Israel, who after all those years of slavery in Egypt are now free from Pharaoh. They're free, finally, and they're on their way to the promised land. But first they have to cross this desert. They have to be tested in the wilderness. And their first test in that wilderness was what we might call, or their first temptation rather, was the temptation of appetite. You see, there's not a lot to eat in the desert. Yeah? And so it's not long until their bellies begin to rumble, and they begin to grumble, and they go to their leader, Moses, and they say to him, I'm paraphrasing, they say, hey, Moses, what's the story? Yeah? Have you brought us out here in the desert to starve us to death? I know we were slaves back in Egypt, but at least they fed us. What kind of freedom is this? And what are you, Moses, going to do about it? Well, Moses, or rather God, does something about it, you may remember. God sends manna. Remember, manna from heaven. And that keeps them going for a while. But you soon get tired of manna for breakfast, manna for lunch, manna for dinner, manna as a snack. So God sends them something else, remember? God sends them quails. In fact, God sends them so many quails that the quails piled up and some of them rotted and they gave the Israelites plague and half of them died. And they called the place where they buried those people Kibroth Hattaavah, which means the graves of appetite. So that was Israel's first big temptation in the wilderness, the temptation of appetite. And as we saw in today's gospel, that was the first temptation that Jesus conquered when he refused to turn stones into bread. One does not live by bread alone, he says. Food alone is not enough. You need something more. Then the Israelites' second temptation happened when they got to Mount Sinai. Maybe you remember this too. Moses, you remember, goes up the mountain to get the Ten Commandments from God. The only problem is Moses was gone such a long time up the mountain that the people got tired of waiting for him. And they began to wonder if he was ever coming back. And they began to wonder if maybe they were following the right God after all. So they decided, you'll remember, to make their own God. They melted down their gold, remember? And they made a golden calf. A golden calf, which, by the way, was one of the local fertility gods. And when they'd made the golden calf, they set about worshipping it and doing the sorts of things around it that fertility gods approve of. But while they were in the middle of these festivities, Moses comes back. And he's none too pleased. He smashes the golden calf, grinds it into powder, forces them to drink the drink that he makes of the powder, and a lot of them die. And they call that place Beth Awen, the place of the house of destruction. So that was Israel's second, or the children of Israel's second temptation, idolatry. Idolatry. And again, that was the second temptation that Jesus conquered when he refused to bow down to the devil, to this idol, and said, worship God and God alone, no other gods. And then finally, in this little recap, temptation number three for those children of Israel in the desert came at a place called Rephidim, which means flat lands. And in that place, the children of Israel despaired. They gave up. There was still no sign of this promised land, this land flowing with milk and honey. All that surrounded them was this flat, waterless emptiness, and they were dying of thirst. So they sat down there in the desert and they refused to go on. They willed themselves to die. And that place became known as Massa and Meribah, which means the place of bitter testing, because that's where Israel despaired and put God to the test by preferring to die. And again, that was the third and final temptation overcome by Jesus when he said, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. So there you have it, the three temptations: appetite, idolatry, despair. And what I'd like to suggest to you this morning is this. Those are not just the kind of temptations faced by the children of Israel and overcome by Jesus, are they? Those essentially are the kind of temptations that we face too, aren't they? Think about it. Number one, the temptation of appetite. Well, we know all about that one, don't we? But of course, it's about more than just food or drink. It's about anything, really, which, though good in itself, can become deadly destructive when abused or misused or taken to excess. And when that happens, when something comes to control us rather than we controlling it, then we get to the second temptation in our lives, don't we? The temptation to idolatry. Because again, idolatry is about so much more than the obvious things like dancing around golden calves. Yeah, it's about so much more than that. No, pretty much anything can become an idol, can become a god for us. Money, success, status, power, work, possessions, popularity, the list goes on. Idolatry happens when we give our hearts away to something less than God. When we give our hearts away to something less than the really real, than the beautiful, the true, and the good to God. And then turning to the third temptation, the temptation of despair. Again, I expect many of us know about that one. Because one of the insights you get from being a priest, let me tell you, is the realization that deep distress and desperation and despair are far more common than you might think. In fact, I suspect that we all go through at one time or other in our lives. We all go through a dark night of the soul, a time when we are tempted to give up. That was Jesus' experience, remember. That was Jesus' experience, both in the desert and also later in the Garden of Gethsemane on the night before he died. Jesus, remember, experienced all that it means to be human, all that it means to be tested, all that it means to be tempted. And yet he overcame them. He overcame them. And through his Spirit within us, we can overcome them too. In other words, you're not on your own. You're not on your own facing those temptations. There is a power, a presence, a love which is with us, and most particularly with us, perhaps, during those wilderness times of testing. It all reminds me, and I'll finish with this story, of a story I told from this pulpit at Christmas 2017, Christmas Day. So if you're here on Christmas Day 2017, apologies, you're going to hear it again. But it's one of my favorite stories, and it's wonderful, and it sums up the gospel. Here's the story. It's from that American TV series, The West Wing. Does anybody remember The West Wing? About the American president and his staff, yeah? And in this episode, the chief of staff, Leo, is helping his assistant, Josh, because Josh is having a tough time. He's going through a very difficult personal time. And Leo says, "I'll be there for you, Josh, because I've been through tough times too." He was a recovering addict. And then he tells Josh this story. Here it goes. One day, a man was walking down the street. He was walking down the street, minding his own business, when he fell into a hole in the ground. Now the hole was so deep, and the sides of the hole were so steep, that he couldn't climb out. It was before mobile phones as well, by the way, so he couldn't ring. He's stuck in the hole, okay? So he's stuck in the hole in the ground, and after a while a doctor walks by. So our guy shouts up, "Hey doc, it's me, I'm stuck down in the hole, can you help me out?" So the doctor comes over, takes a look down into the hole, takes out his notebook, writes a prescription for some medicine, drops the prescription into the hole, and continues on his way. A while later, a priest comes along. Our guy shouts up, "Hey, Reverend, remember me? I was at your church once. I'm stuck down here in this hole. Can you help me out?" So the priest comes over, has a look down into the hole, takes out his notebook, writes a prayer, beautiful prayer, drops the prayer in the hole and walks on. Then finally, a while later, a friend walks by. Our guy shouts up, "Hey Joe, me old pal Joe, I'm stuck down here in this hole, can you help me out?" Joe comes over, takes a look down into the hole, and then he jumps into the hole. Well, our guy's not impressed. "Are you crazy? Are you mad? Now we're both stuck down here in the hole." To which the friend replies, "Ah, but I've been down here before, and I know the way out." That is the gospel. God, the steady swell of loving presence at the heart of our lives. God in Jesus has jumped into the hole of our humanity. H-O-L-E and W-H-O-L-E. And so God in Jesus has experienced with us all the temptations, all the tests, all the holes we find ourselves in. And God in Jesus will never abandon us, but will bring us safely home. Bring us safely home.